You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 159, the last episode of 2014. We'll actually clock over into the episode 160 for 2015. And talking about numbers, our guest today is Patty. And as you know, and I do have to say this each time at the beginning of the show in case you've stumbled upon this podcast for the first time, the general format is that somebody comes onto the show as a guest, and this time it's Patty, who lives in the States, and we phone or Skype you, and the one thing that I don't know is anything about your dream, so that when we start recording, I hear the dream for the first time as you do listening. So you listen to the whole process of me listening to the dream and how we interpret it and do the dream alchemy and explore what's happening in the dreamer's life that's brought up the dream at the first time. And as you'll hear listening this dream, as in most dream shows where we've got a guest, perhaps all dream shows where we've got a guest, by the end of the talk, the dreamer is in a clearer mind about what they're doing, where they're going, decisions are made, conflicts are identified, and all of that. And it's really exciting to listen to that. So you've got all of that coming up, and I'm going to give you one little clue, because obviously we've just recorded it and I'm sticking this bit on the beginning. It's a wonderful dream. We get heaps out of it. There's one number in the dream. I'll tell you what it is now. It's 43. Hear it when it comes up. And when we at one point go in and explore what that 43 might mean, we look at some possibilities. And then towards the end of the discussion, maybe about three quarters of the way through, we suddenly work out what it is. So stand by for that excitement. That's one of many little exciting moments where you go, oh my God, is that what the... Oh, that's amazing the way dreams do that. Absolutely amazing. So before I hand you over to listen to Patty, the best website of mine to go to is probably my blog, which is www.janetheresa.com. That's Theresa without an H. There's also a website, and the blog also points to the Dream Store. At the Dream Store, there are ebooks, there are books, there are all sorts of services and ways that you can either consult with me on a dream or a nightmare, do dream alchemy, do courses with me, do training, all of that stuff. You can go to the Dream Store and look at that, and or find me on Facebook. But now, here's Patty. Enjoy. Welcome to the Dream Show, Patty. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great.
It's quite an interesting day that we're recording this. We're actually recording your show about 4 weeks before it goes live. But today in Brisbane is the first day of the G20 summit, which your president, Barack Obama, is attending, as are about 20 plus other presidents and prime ministers and heads of state around the world. So we live quite close to the Brisbane city centre. So it's a public holiday and there's high security everywhere. And one of the reasons I'm mentioning this is that we may or may not get some really heavy duty security helicopters fly over in the middle of our recording.
Okay, that's good to know. I didn't know all this was going on, so that's really fascinating.
It is. It's interesting that we're having this lovely, aside from continent to continent on dreams while all this other stuff is going on, and there's been a big heavy-duty security manoeuvres and practices all week, so we really feel like we're at the centre of the universe here in Brisbane at the moment. But far more importantly than any of that is you and your dream. So what have you been dreaming?
Okay. So I gave it a title. One is silver and the other gold, and I'll just begin. I am riding my bike home from somewhere. It seems like a new job or maybe school. It is early afternoon, but suddenly it turns dark, so I switch on the light on my bike as I cross the crosswalk. I feel disoriented and can hardly see the open lip to the other side of the street, afraid I will crash in the dark. Suddenly, I pull into a building on a small path, but find it only leads to a very damp, small field like a quagmire or swamp filled with sprouts of grass and weeds. There is no way to get across. I back up out onto the sidewalk and park my bike. Somehow my Audi Allroad is also parked in the parking lot. I enter the building, and I'm impressed because I never even knew this library was here. I speak with the clerk or librarian at the front desk. She thinks I want to buy this one DVD, which is a documentary or a movie, but I only wanted to check it out and not purchase it. She rings up a receipt for $43, but I tell her no thank you. I need to get back to my car. I find myself trying to load my old bike and my new bike into the car that is now without a bike rack on top. Next to my Allroad is a Camry, just like my husband's, with a huge dent in the side. At first, I am confused as I think, oh no, someone hit my car. I need to hurry and empty the trunk and load the two bikes because they tell me I need to move my car to a different spot in the basement lot. It has to do with security. Apparently, this is a high security area or governmental property. A patient who died several years ago suddenly gets in my car to move it to the basement. When I see how far down she has to go into the other parking lot, I'm so afraid I won't be able to find my car again. I am ready to leave, so why do I need to move my car so urgently? Also, I am now in a panic that I left something behind, like the front tire to my old bike.
Mm.
And that's it.
Left something behind, like the front tire to your old bike.
Mm-hmm.
I was just smiling, and Michael turned and gave me a smile there when you mentioned towards the end of the dream that you were in a high security government kind of thing after just what we were talking about, G20, going on while we're talking about your dream.
Yes, there's a synchronicity around that. So.
There certainly is. I just didn't, it's a great dream, Patty. I just slightly, in taking my notes, I slightly missed a bit at the end. Towards the end, after the moving your car down to the high security area of the basement, did you say a patient who had died said took it deep down? I just missed that little bit.
Yes, a patient in who I took care of in real life. She was all of a sudden in my dream, and she was the one to move my car.
Right, okay. And she took it so deep down that that's when you began to panic and think, I'm worried, you know, I'm actually here not for long. How am I going to be able to get it up and out and on the road, and what have I left behind, like maybe the front of my tire. That was what the end was, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that patient, Patty, what was her name?
Wow. Yeah, I can say her name. She's since died, and I don't think there's anything confidential about it. Her name was Debbie Albertson.
Mm-hmm. And what did she kind of, what was her personality, would you say, in two or three words?
Yeah, salt of the earth, extremely authentic, genuine.
Yeah, sounds like a really beautiful person. And when you were taking care of her, when Debbie died, did that end something else in your life? Did something else come to an end when that kind of caretaking finished?
There was a sense when she would come in, and she was one of these patients. There are very few who don't wait for you to call them. She would wander back in the hallway and find me in my office and take a seat in the chair next to my desk. And I loved that about her, that she was so bold. I felt most comfortable, most myself with her. Mm. There was a sense that not only I knew her, but she really knew me.
Yes.
And it was very comfortable.
Yeah. So that's probably what she represents, given the rest of the dream there. She represents many things too, but particularly because you see her as authentic and genuine, and her mere presence in waking life made you feel the same, made you feel like yourself, and made you feel comfortable, authentic and genuine. So we'll come back to the end of the dream. I just wanted to get a real feel for what she represented there. So,
okay.
Yeah, wonderful. Now, The dream begins, and the start of the dream is often addressing the situation that your dreaming mind is processing, and then the rest of the dream goes on to look at that situation. And of course, the dream does reflect the one or two days beforehand. So, when did you have this dream, Patty?
I had this dream on the 1st of November.
Mm. So this was reflecting the last couple of days of October, whatever was going on for you then in particular.
Yes.
Yeah, so about a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Now, the bike that you were driving home at the beginning of the dream, is that a bike that you actually have?
Yes, it felt like the bike I actually have and ride frequently right now.
Which is different from your old bike that you referenced at the end of the dream?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's the bike that you have now. And how long have you had this bike?
Wow. I was trying to think about that. Maybe 10 years.
About 10 years. Whereas the old bike that you refer to at the end of the dream, when did you let go of that old bike? At the same time, 10 years ago?
Well, no, I hadn't been on that old bike for probably 10, 20 years.
Okay, that's great. So just because the dream obviously begins with a bike and ends with a question about a bike, you know, I might have left something behind, like particularly the front tire of my old bike. There's that sense of at the end of the dream, or the question, the unresolved aspect of the dream at the end is in going forward in my life at this point, have I left something behind that's valuable? And if I have, is it really valuable, or is it just me thinking, oh no, I can't let that go, and is it something that I should be able to let go? So that's one of the things that we're going to explore there. And one of the things about the old bike is it's something that you actually haven't been on for 10 or 20 years. So that sense of concern about, am I leaving something important behind at the end of the dream, may refer to something that you haven't actually been doing for 10 or 20 years that you kind of... is there something for 10 or 20 years ago that, which we'll come back to later, that is still important to me that I maybe shouldn't be burying deep in the basement for security reasons? I should actually be taking it forward with me in some way. So we'll come back to that.
Okay.
The other main question I had about the dream, just to clarify it for me and the listeners, in the middle you had the building, and you went through the building and it didn't lead anywhere. Well, it did. It was a quagmire and it just had sprouts and weeds, and you backed up. And then you said you went into the building, the library. So how do the two buildings relate? I was a bit confused. Were they the same building or buildings next to each other? Or
it was like a college campus. There was one main building where I was headed to. And when I entered that, I found out that was a library, and I really didn't even know it was there.
Right, okay. So the first building that seemed to lead to the quagmire, can you run me through that part of the dream again?
Yeah, they were just small, kind of unassuming buildings you wouldn't notice. I was trying to get inside. It was like a complex. I was trying to get beyond those to the other side of the little swamp where the main building was I wanted to enter.
Got it. Thanks for drawing that map for us. That's really good.
Sure.
I like the way that you describe those smaller buildings to begin with as unassuming and wanting to get beyond that. And unassuming, I don't know, there's also a feeling about unassuming of... you describe to me what you mean by unassuming. What does unassuming kind of describe for you? If you call a person unassuming, what would you be really trying to say about them?
That they just are just there. They don't maybe know what their purpose is. They might be, like, I think of the buildings as just simple, plain... maybe abandoned, maybe not very useful or noticeable.
Mm. Yeah. Wonderful, because that's what I was thinking too. I just wanted to check we were on the same page there.
Good.
Because I was thinking, as you were saying, unassuming buildings, I was thinking back to Debbie and to you and thinking how, you know, you really admired the fact that Debbie was such an authentic and genuine person, and how she, by her mere presence, made you feel the same. She would seek you out, and in doing that, you felt comfortable and you felt more like yourself. And I think when we say that somebody makes me feel like myself, well, it's kind of to state the obvious, but sometimes we need to state the obvious. It's really saying, I know who I am. When I feel myself, when I feel authentic, I know who I am.
Yes.
Right. When I need to not be authentic, to try to be someone else, to try to put on an image, to not feel comfortable with expressing who I am, in a sense, that's because I have lost touch with who I am. If I really am in touch with my identity, when we're in touch with your identity, it seems to go hand in hand with having a sense of purpose. You know, yeah. When we each discover who we really are, right, okay, that's me. Or in different words, right, okay, that's what I'm here for. Okay, now I know what I'm supposed to do. That's me, that's my unique special role. We've all got one, whatever it is, that sense of identity. Yes, I've identified what it is about me. Whereas that other thing, that the sense of the unassuming, or as you said, even like not useful or abandoned, I think you said lost its sense of purpose, an unassuming building or an unassuming person is one that doesn't have a purpose anymore. So we've got that sense there running through the dream of a question, almost two opposites there, of the question of, have I, the dreamer, Patty, to some extent, or at least I'm processing in this dream, my feelings about my identity, really checking in with what is my identity, what is my purpose, in which kind of situations do I feel comfortable and feel authentic and be myself and in touch with what I want to do and what my purpose is. And when at other times do I have a sense that I've lost that I'm maybe walking around and for whatever reason, maybe sometimes deferring to other people, it could be anything, I have the sense that I'm being unassuming, that I'm not being as useful as I might be, if only I could find what that sense of usefulness is. And I liked the way that you also described unassuming Patty as maybe abandoned, because at the end of the dream, you've got that feeling of, oh my goodness, have I left behind something important, the right tire of my old bike? Have I abandoned something here?
Yeah, have I abandoned myself?
Yes. And in particular, that sense of what you may have abandoned about yourself at the end of the dream being something to do with your old bike may be something that you are questioning in the dream, something that related to 10 or 20 years ago when you were last on that bike. Am I abandoning something that's part of myself from back then? And the question that we will be as we explore all the other details in the dream is sometimes we're right and we really are abandoning something and want to bring it back on board, and sometimes we're not so right. Maybe that was our identity and was a value that we had then, and maybe it's time to let that go and move a little further through the dark and evolve to the next level. I don't know, we don't know until we look through the dream, but there's part of that sense in the dream of looking for the sense of identity, authenticity and meaning, where you feel comfortable with that, and yet at the same time the question of am I abandoning a part of myself in this quest to be more useful than not useful. And one of the big issues is, how can I be assuming, if that's the opposite to unassuming? How can I walk through the world in a way that is confident, rather than perhaps stepping back and feeling I've got to be more humble or unassuming than that?
Uh-huh. Right. Everything, all the above, what you're describing is exactly where I'm at. And, trying to really reflect on this and figuring all of this out.
Oh, that's really good. So we're bang on target. So thank you for that. So what I suggest we do is I'll pick out some more things that I can see in the dream, and then I'll hand it over to you to fill in how that's relating to your life then, now, and then we'll work on it and work towards some alchemy from there. So you've got the beginning of the dream. You're on your bike. You're going home. And it feels like it's from something new, a new situation. So I guess from what you've described there, it's the sense of the dream begins, okay, the situation is I'm coming home to myself, to where I should feel most comfortable, and I feel like I'm coming from something new. So possibly in the couple of days before the dream, in the thinking over and the reflecting that you're doing, Patty, there's a sense where you did actually begin to imagine a new situation. And you're now exploring in the dream, okay, I'm coming home from something new, a new vision of how things could be. How do I feel like that? And at first it's really good, yeah. And then it becomes a bit dark. It's like, I can't really see where I'm going here. And as with all of us, you know, sometimes we plan for things and we can see the light, we can see every step of the way and we march forward confidently. And other times it's dark, we can't really see where we're going, either because we haven't figured it out or because we're trusting and just walking into the mystery. We don't know which at the moment. There's that sense in your dream as once it's dark, I feel shaky. I think you said I wrote down here, what did I write down? I can't, disorientated.
Yes, disoriented. And I could fill in so much here, but I'm just going to wait for your questions.
Okay. you were feeling once you kind of hit the dark, disorientated, and I've got here a fear of crashing. So there's a sense of,
yes,
when I think about going into something new, if I'm not conscious or aware of all the steps, if I can't see the entire way, I don't feel entirely confident about walking into the mystery. I feel disorientated and I have a fear of crashing. I think, what if everything goes wrong? I don't feel totally confident about, well, it'll either work or it won't work and we'll jump that fence when we come here. I'm identifying, which is really important in the dream, a fear of crashing, of it all going wrong. So then the dream then basically goes on to take up that theme and it comes up with the idea of the unassuming buildings. So, you know, that the fear of crashing, it's almost like, okay, maybe I feel disorientated because I haven't really found in this instant how my sense of myself or my authenticity is going to work with this new idea that I've got. I'm exploring that. I'm worried that I'm sort of feel unassuming. I haven't quite tuned into how I could be useful doing that, and I've got a question of, am I abandoning something or will I be abandoned? And you look ahead in the dream, it's like, that is a quagmire, that is just weeds. So
yeah,
you kind of make a decision. They get back up. I'm. It's almost like the decision is made in the dream. I don't think that's a decision of fear. It's almost like, right, I'm not going there. I've decided that I'm not.
Yeah, there's no way to get across.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to try a different way through, which is good. So then you do miraculously find that different way across. We're not quite sure how, because you do then end up at the bigger building and you walk in and you're surprised that it's a library and you didn't know it was there. So that was a good feeling, wasn't it, when you walked in?
Yes, and I love libraries.
Okay. What is it you particularly like about libraries?
Well, the one where I went to write a lot, close to where I live, to finish, to complete my dissertation, was... it's just a beautiful college campus, and it's like being in Europe, and it has a very old, very comforting feeling. It's the aesthetics there, the smell, the beauty. This is pregnant with wisdom and books and words, and it's just, I absolutely love it there, and I have images all the time of sitting there writing.
Oh, that sounds absolutely beautiful. What a sense around picture you painted there. So it's
rather
really,
poetic.
Yeah, very poetic. And you do like words, so poetry. So that was a really good thing in the library, in the dream. You went from this kind of backed away from unassuming, not useful, not sure of identity, not sure of purpose, into walking into something which was a lovely surprise and which represents a lot of things and qualities that you really enjoy. And particularly, you said comfortable there, you know, and when we were talking about Debbie and you earlier on, you were talking about the sense of comfort with being yourself. So
yes,
that sense. So there is a sense that in this part of the dream, being in the library was a sense of identity and being at home and feeling comfortable. But it did go on to a bit of an issue. That there was a question of the clerk thinking that you wanted to buy the documentary DVD and you just wanted to check it out. Any idea what the documentary was about?
Oh, you know, I think that I did know the instant I woke up, but that was something that dissolved rather quickly.
Yeah.
You know how dreams do.
Yeah. Do you often borrow DVDs that are documentaries, or is that really a complete dream symbol?
Yes, I did that a lot when I was working on my dissertation, and I do check out documentaries from the public library. So I think yes.
Right. So it has both to do with, in a sense, it's symbolically with your public kind of life, and also with your PhD, your thesis, your research.
Yes.
Yeah.
And often it's in search of something inspirational.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's a key, isn't it? In search of inspirational. So we've then got, backtracking slightly in your dream. Here I am in the library. I didn't know this was here. Everything and everyone in a dream is a part of the self. Oh my goodness, the moment I back away from what appears to be unassuming, not useful, purposeless quagmire, the moment I make a decision and back away from, I don't want to go down that track, I want to be useful, I discover that part of myself that I didn't know existed, the library. Well, I kind of did, because as soon as I went to the library, I felt at home. It was everything that I love. It felt comfortable, but I didn't know it was accessible to me. I didn't know I was here. And yet, which is lovely. And now I'm here. I want to check out a DVD because I'm looking for further inspiration, because that's often what DVDs represent to you.
Yes. There was a pulling in. There is sort of the building was... sort of magnetic. I was being pulled somewhere. Mm. I didn't know it was a library, but I knew where I was going. Mm. I knew there was a building in the center of this complex where I needed to go.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, even if, before we go back to the DVD, even if you go back to the beginning of the dream and there's that sense of I'm in the dark, and we're going, oh, you're in the dark, I don't know which way I'm going, I can't see my way, I need to be able to see my way, fear of crashing. And yet you've now introduced that without necessarily, even though it wasn't so dark at that time in the dream, without necessarily being able to see, there was a pull, something was pulling you magnetically. You didn't actually need to be able to see, you had a deeper sense, you were responding to a deeper sense, which was magnetism.
Right.
So following in, and there are many different words we could put on that, and you could probably put far more words than I could, but that sense of being pulled magnetically, it's more like a passion call, it's a calling, being pulled magnetically, a calling is something that you don't say no to.
Right, and it's a sense of there's a saying that is sticking with me that my mom taught me, and I don't know if it was a Trappist monk Thomas Merton or who said this, but it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. Mm-hmm. And that's been coming up a lot, that the sense of that, those words.
That's beautiful, isn't it? And that's so true. One little candle can actually light up so much. I guess it's the sense, can be interpreted so many ways, but I guess you're saying the sense of one small action to light that candle makes such a difference. And to look it's an action towards problem solving rather than the negativity of cursing the situation.
Well, I can even feel the tire, the friction on the pavement as if it's lighting the match.
That's wonderful. Okay, so thank you for that. So we'll come back to Thomas Merton probably later, maybe even in your alchemy. But so we've got that sense of your, even though you can't see, there's a sense of being pulled along magnetically. And because you instantly wanted to talk about your mum and Thomas Merton and the candle, it may be that sense of the pulling or the calling or the magnetic feeling is, yes, it may feel passive, like you're being pulled along, but it does require one small action from me, which is to light the candle. So there's that sense there. And I love that you said you felt you were being pulled along magnetically to the center of the building. So again, if everything in the dream represents something about yourself, this part of the dream is taking you to your very core, to your very center, which is exactly where we need to be if we want to be in alignment with our authenticity, our genuine self. It's right there in the center. It's not the superficial stuff on the outside. It's to state the obvious, it's there at the center. Coming back, being centered. But there's still an issue when you get there. You don't want to buy the documentary. You want to check it out. And in the end, you don't even check it out. You walk away. You say no thanks.
Yes.
So why, just, it may be obvious, but why did you want to check it out rather than buy it in the dream?
There's a sense of it wasn't about what I thought it was going to be about. And she didn't quite understand me, that I only want to check it out. She was only wanting to sell it to me.
Right.
And so I think that's what I was saying no thank you to.
Okay.
But I couldn't just check it out. I had to buy it on the spot.
Right. So there's a sense of, we almost use that in wording sometimes, don't we? I don't want to buy into something. I'm still thinking about it.
Exactly. That's a good way to summarize that. Mm.
So you were in this lovely library center part of yourself that you're really attracted to, and you feel quite at home there, and everything seems to be right, but you're looking for further inspiration from there, but you don't want to make a quick decision. You don't want to buy into something that doesn't feel quite right. Everything felt quite right apart from one thing, and it may be right, but it didn't feel right enough at that moment to buy into it. You wanted to check it out, borrow it, have a think about it, see if it was 100% right as it was, or if there was something you could take from that and build into something else, or completely leave.
Yeah, that's an accurate assessment.
Okay, that's good. So then it brought you to the price, the 43, and numbers and dreams are one of those things that can actually be great big pointers. So 43, have you been 43 years old already?
Yes, I have.
So it could mean a number of things. It could also mean a house that you lived in once that was number 43. It could be, you know, a course number you took. It could be any number of things, but does the year when you were 43 years old stand out at you at the moment for any particular reason, or particularly resonating with what we're talking about, or, you know, and particularly something that you didn't want to buy into because that was, I'm not paying $43 for that?
Not offhand. You know, I'm kind of reading it backwards and thinking like three is it represents the Trinity and four might be wholeness, but that's something Carl Jung, that's the way he looks at it, and I really didn't think about what this number meant.
Okay, well, it's more important if that was within your personal symbolism library through your reading as you go to sleep and dream, you know, you've been studying Jung, you've been looking at the way that he would look at those numbers, then that is something that you have got in your personal dream library. So when your dreaming brain brings that up, that's personal to you, and that may well mean what you see there, the Trinity and what did you say the four was again?
The wholeness,
that's right. Yeah. So so a kind of double wholeness thing there, mind, body and soul. So because that's a personal symbol to you, that may well be what it is. So we'll just leave that sitting there at the moment and we may be able to come back and work that out. But you rejected it. Oh, I guess also there's that feeling, isn't it? She was asking you to buy the whole thing. You take this whole thing, mind, body and soul, this documentary, the whole deal. And you go, no, I don't want to buy into that whole thing. I just want to borrow it and maybe give it back. Maybe get something from it, not the whole thing. So your feeling for the 43 symbolizing wholeness, even though the Jungian way in which you described it was a good sense of wholeness there. there's a sense of rejection of that in the dream.
Yes.
Hmm. So then we go to the bit where the cars come in. How often in your life are you riding bikes, and how often are you driving a car? Like, how do you see the usefulness of cars and bikes?
Yeah, so I do bicycle a lot, and in fact, just in August went on a 460-mile bike ride, and it involved a lot of cycling putting bikes on top of cars and getting them down and, packing them safely. And I have done that very, very often. I've done a lot of long distance cycling.
Mm. For personal pleasure?
Yes.
Mm. Whereas when you drive a car, that would generally be, when would you generally drive a car? Apart from driving a car to get your bike from A to B, when do you generally drive a car?
When, like, unrelated to cycling?
Yes, yeah.
Until recently, to work and just running errands.
Errands and work, okay. So day-to-day practical stuff.
Yeah.
So so we have this whole thing after rejecting the I'm not buying into that inspiration, I'm either not ready for it or it's not what I was thinking it was. We then go into the question of the bikes and the cars in the dream. And it's really that whole thing of can you get the old and the new bike into your car? That was the first one, wasn't it?
Yes.
The new bike as in the one that you were cycling at the beginning of the dream.
Yes.
And the old one being the one that you last had 10 to 20 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. So what you're looking at, this part of the dream, that's interesting. Going from that sense of, am I going to buy into the whole thing? You then go into, can I take the whole stuff with me? Can I take everything from the old and everything from the new ahead of me? Because that's really what I want to do. I want to take the whole thing. But then on the other hand, can I really fit it all in? Am I going to have to leave some of this behind? So again, yeah, it's exploring the idea of, am I buying into the whole thing or just a bit of it, and which bit, and what do I leave behind? And then your husband's car, the Camry, comes in with the dent. What does the Camry represent to you? I mean, I know it's your husband's car, but what would be the personality of his particular Camry in your mind's eye?
Yeah, it's old. I don't drive it much. I'm just waiting for it to break down. it's something that he's attached to. Like my car in the dream, his car doesn't have a bike rack, and my car always has a bike rack on top in real life. It's never without a bike rack. In the dream, right, it didn't have one, and neither did his car.
Yeah. So there's that sense of a bike rack is really useful if a bike is important to you, as your bike is important to you. So yeah, there's a sense of both cars in the dream were not useful in terms of helping you have what you need for your following your passion, at least in your bike area of your life.
Yes.
So there was a sense of something missing there. I just went from useful because when you were talking about the unassuming buildings at the college on the way to the library, you said that, you know, you said they weren't very useful anymore. They were abandoned.
Uh-huh.
So we're coming back.
They weren't interesting.
Sorry?
They weren't interesting.
And they also weren't interesting, that's right. And neither is your husband's car, because you said you're just waiting for it to break down.
Right. And I wonder, what is his car doing there?
Yeah. And you're wondering, what is his car doing there? And it's got a dent. And you've described it as something he's attached to. You're more than ready for him to let it go and for it to get out of your life. And he's holding on to it because he's attached to it. And that's the theme towards the end of the dream too for you, you know. I'm panicking and I'm worried because I'm leaving behind the front tire of my bike. Should I be taking it with me?
Yes.
A sense of attachment. You know, what am I attached to? Is it important to take things that I'm attached to forward with me? Or should I really lay them all out in front of me and going, these are still of value to me, these ones need to let go? So it's bringing in that theme again.
Yes.
And the person that tries to, the person, who says there's a need to move your car into the basement? That wasn't Debbie. Debbie moved it. Who said it needed to be moved into the basement?
Oh, you know, there's a sort of a blurred sense of who's saying that.
Okay.
Some parking lot attendants or officials who work there.
Right, okay. So anyway, they're all a part of you, but we're just trying to get some more information. So there's a part of you that actually wants to hang on to everything. Funnily enough, even your husband's old Camry, because in the dream, it's like, I've got to get everything into the basement. That was right, wasn't it? Or was it just your car?
It was just my car.
Oh, just yours, sorry. So at that point in the dream, it's like I'm looking at my husband's car, which represents something that someone is attached to and won't let go. So I'm looking at this idea or this thought or this feeling that sometimes people are attached to things that really have passed their use-by date and they're ready to let go, but they can't emotionally. And
yeah,
I'm now looking at me and my car, and I don't want to let that go because I'm so attached to it. I've got to get it right down the basement and put it under high security. I've got to get it really deep down. And yet at the same time, I'm really worried and panicky because I actually want to get in my car and drive it somewhere. And I'm also worried about what I'm leaving behind. So that whole feeling at the end of the dream there is that there's a push me, pull me there, a conflict within you between wanting to really lock down and keep something that perhaps you should be, perhaps, maybe, questionably, you're over-attached to and need to let go. You're wanting to lock that down, put it deep down, keep it really secure. But how can you do that? And there's where the conflict, because at the same time, you know it's really important to you to get in your car and go somewhere. So
yeah,
in the battle between, you know, if it's going to be either or, well, it's either or there's going to be a win-win situation in between, which is what we'll look at. But the one thing that you identify very strongly there is, you know, you're going more towards, but I actually need to get in the car and go somewhere.
Yes. Yes, and why, you know, why do I need to move my car so urgently to a different place when I'm almost done figuring out how to load the bike?
Yes. So take that thought and fill us in, but particularly in the day or two before the dream, where did you feel in the day or two before the dream that you'd almost got your idea for moving forward into shape? And it was almost an idea where I can take myself, my genuine, authentic self. I can take what I need. I can take the things I value. I can even maybe take the old and the new, everything. I'm that close to finding a solution for that. And yet I'm panicking and wanting to lock it back down. Where does that kind of feeling reflect in the day or two before the dream? Can you see that?
Yes. Yes. Well, so the day before the dream was my last day at work. I am on a 3-month Family Medical Leave Act. Mm. Work was just causing extreme anxiety, and what I realized is I wasn't in touch with my core values, and my inner and outer priorities were not in alignment. Mm. I am really surprised at how quickly things happened. I went to my doctor 2 days before that, and she agreed that this would be an approved time off from work. And so I'm just towards the end of my second week of my 3-month leave from work. Mm. And trying to, what's happening right now is there's just a lot of synchronicity, and I'm sort of rediscovering my core values and what it is I really want to do,
yeah,
which involves one of my really important values, and that is autonomy and creativity, and I'm going in the direction of starting my own consultative practice.
Fantastic. Fantastic. That sounds really good. So, and that's what you've been going through in the last 2 weeks. And this dream was 2 weeks ago. So a lot of what you're saying there may also have developed as a result of having the dream, with or without you understanding it.
Yes, I didn't try to understand it. This is the first time I've really looked at it. I type all my dreams, but, you know, this is giving me a lot of insight, and I can understand now why I have this dream.
Mm. So with the security, you don't have to tell us what it is because a lot of people listening, of course, but just one key question, is the medical condition to do with you or to do with someone that you're caring for?
Oh, it has to do with me.
To do with you, okay.
Yeah.
And again, you don't need to tell us what it is, but can you somehow see the medical body condition reflected in this as well?
Well, I know what... Like, for instance, I'll just say a few things like, I haven't had to take sleeping pills and I haven't had to take an antacid since I left work.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful.
So I had this foreboding sense that something was terrible was going to happen to my physical health. I could just, I'm intuitive enough and in tune with my body that something was going to happen physically, and I was not ready to sell out to that. It's like this institution is not going to kill me.
Yes.
Or make me unhealthy.
Yes. So that's where you didn't want to buy into the documentary in the library maybe as well.
Yes, perhaps so.
To take what you can. So yes, well, I can see it definitely works in with all of that, and I do want to come back to that in a minute, but you titled the dream One is Silver and the Other Gold. Is that the two bikes?
I think so, yes. Mm. Yeah, there was a song I sang growing up as a child in school about make new friends, but keep the old, one is silver and the other gold. And so, yes, that title came out of just the image of the two bikes.
Mm. So what you're feeling is that both in taking your 3 months leave and medical condition apart, the time to reconnect with your core values and make decisions, you're saying that you're feeling that the right thing for you is to keep the old and the new, not in fact to abandon or to let go of things that you're attached to.
Yes, because my experience and wisdom from that experience is really providing me with insight and confidence to branch out and start my own business. And the other thing, I think of car as an automobile, auto like self, and I just you know, doing a lot of dream work over the years, one thing I see that's consistent or a pattern in my dreams is oftentimes I am not in the front seat of my car. I'm in the back seat, or I'm not driving it, someone else is.
Yeah.
And so that really speaks to me, like I am not being true to myself.
Yes. Have you had a dream in the 2 weeks since you've been on leave where you have been in the driver's seat in the car?
No, I'm waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, because there's a sense in this dream that, well, no one else was going to drive the car. Well, sorry, that's not true. Debbie drove the car down into the security area.
She's also like a mirror for me.
She is, that's right, yeah. And there's also the sense in the dream is that you were working out how to load the old and the new bike into the car so that you could drive it. There wasn't another driver in sight in the dream, was there?
No. Uh-uh.
So it's imminent that you're going to get in the car and drive it.
So she showed up driving my car. I was going to load the bikes and drive the car.
Yes, okay. So in a sense, she showed up. And yet you weren't happy when she showed up because she drove it into she drove it into high security.
I wasn't unhappy and I wasn't happy. It was just one of sort of bewildered. Mm. Where did she come from? I really like her. Yeah, I trust her to drive my car, but why is she driving my car?
Yeah, okay, I get it. So so there is that sense. There's a couple of things there. One is maybe the question of why the authentic self, part of myself, is driving my car. You know, on a positive spin, it might be your readiness of, oh my goodness, can I actually do that? Can I drive my own car?
Yeah.
The other is, why isn't it me, or why isn't it me, the real authentic self, getting in the car? And the other question I have to ask, again, without asking you to make any declaration, but is the disease of which Debbie died something that you have a feeling that your body is going to succumb to? When you're saying you're really worried that your body is maybe going to get sick, is it the same thing that you're concerned about?
You know, it's interesting. She died of breast cancer, and in the U.S., it's an epidemic. Mm. If you're over 55 or 60, you're automatically considered high risk. And it's interesting. I have a mammogram coming up, and every time I go in, I get called back, and it's nothing. But every time there's a it generates extreme anxiety because one of my specialties, I'm a cancer nurse, one of my specialties is breast cancer.
Mm.
So,
right.
And this Debbie, she was quite young when she died. She was in her early 40s.
Was she 43?
Oh, I should go back and look at that. I never thought about that. It's very possible.
Well, if she was early 40s, she was either 41, 42, 43, or 44. So I'd say it's 43.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So if we go back over, there's a lot of stuff there. The buying into this thing would have cost you $43. So there's a sense of, if I buy into, as you later described it to us, what the system feels or what the system is offering me, it could cost me my life, like Debbie. It could cost me $43. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want to check it out, see what I do want of it, what I don't want of it, or maybe I don't want any of it at all, but I'm not buying into that whole thing.
Yes.
So we've got that feeling
there.
And I'm
currently seeing a career counselor who also does psychotherapy, and I've seen her twice, and she has great insight and is very nurturing and is leading me places where I never thought to go. She's opening up doors and guiding me sort of to this place of who I really want to be in the workforce. But in other words, a vocation versus a career, something my soul is really hungry for. And she seems to really know that, and I trust her to lead me there.
And that's leading you away from being a cancer nurse?
Yes.
As well?
Well,
yeah.
But all that I'm definitely taking with me to what I want to do. And one of the things that really calls to me is counseling and working with people at the end of their lives, because we don't do it very well in traditional medicine. It's, you know, chemo, death, life, or hospice. It's just an abrupt transition with no support or empathy, or it's always one more drug, one more therapy, one more fix. Death is a failure. Let's postpone death for now. no attempt at helping people figure it out who they are before they die. And so I see that as a real calling to me, that I can make space for that. In traditional medicine, there is no time and no support, no reflection on that. It's all about giving as many medications as you can to fix the problem, fix death.
I think that's absolutely fantastic, and I know that's what you're going to do, and I'm so itching to draw some parallels there, so I'm going to put them in here. And one is, I love that, you know, now stepping away from it, as you said, you don't have to take sleeping tablets or the antacid thing. So it's like, you must have been feeling terrible, given the way that you feel about that, having to administer drugs to yourself when that's not what, you know, is of interest to you. But I feel what I really guess I want to say is, I pick up from what you're saying, that you're concerned that there's a deeper worry, a darkness, like the beginning of the dream, that you can't see. You're concerned that you have an inner wisdom that you're going to get sick. Now, I don't think that you are, but I just want to explore what I'm seeing at the end of the dream and what you're saying there. So as you say, each time you go for a mammogram, part of you, and they call you back, you're going, oh, you know. And then you say, but particularly when I'm a cancer nurse, and there's that sense of there, if I have a set of beliefs such as, you know, our deaths should not be drug mediated, whatever, then if I have a set of beliefs and I take an authentic position on that, you know, I decide to go and work in that area, wouldn't it be incredibly embarrassing if I then become really sick, so sick that I need to have the drugs? There's that sense of that, you know, physician heal thyself, that old thing, you know.
And wounded healer.
Yeah, the wounded healer. So I sense that when you feel within yourself, oh my goodness, am I actually picking up on there's something sick in my body? I 100% think that there is nothing wrong with your body. What you're picking up on, being already so deeply educated in the unconscious and psychoanalysis, is you're picking up on all those, that side of the coin. What if I go in authentically and I step out very publicly and I do what is in total alignment with my core values and I work in the way that I have described? What if then I become sick? What are people going to say? When are they going to turn around and say, physician, heal thyself? So you're actually looking at your flip side worries rather than any actual shadow of cancer within yourself, is what I feel from your dream and talking to you. How do you respond to that?
Yes, and it may be just a generalized death anxiety. It's a sort of a secondary trauma. I've seen so much death and dying. In other words, I can change my thoughts and how I view life, but what do you do with those images that are so deeply ingrained in the psyche?
What do you do with those images that are so deeply ingrained in the psyche? Is this something that you're planning to actually work with patients?
Well, yes, and one of the things I'm doing is I'm going back and pulling out some papers I wrote in school, and there were so many things that I wrote about patients, the deformities, the suffering, the pain, you know, that just I could transcend the imagery and start to describe it in beautiful metaphors and poetic ways, and so that's really helping me deal with my unprocessed grief. Which is huge, and I'm sometimes wonder, am I ever going to get through this life and process that grief? Because I've, for 31 years being a cancer nurse, I've really made huge sacrifices and risks, and it's compassion fatigue, but and I'm burned out, but I prefer to use the term secondary trauma, because now when I'm really sinking into it, I can see certainly the disadvantages to what I've been doing for 31 years, but I'm also trying to turn it around and take this wealth of wisdom and experience and give back to patients in the way I really feel aligns with my core values, and in a more helpful way other than saying, here's another drug, we can help you live 2 months longer. And, you know, that 2 months improved overall survival is at a huge cost to society and the economy, and it's kind of like, you know, our overall survival is zero. And we're not gonna, you know, nobody's gonna save me from myself. And so just being in touch, helping patients being in touch with who they are before they die, their core values. So what I'm going through You know, I always wanted to learn from my patients what they're learning without having to get cancer.
Yes, I completely understand.
And I know I need to die, but I, you know, and I don't have a choice, and maybe I will get cancer.
No, I think this is one of those things where you don't have to walk 100 miles in the other person's moccasins to really get that, because you've seen it so deeply. So we do have to wrap quite soon, but one really important thing before moving on to the dream alchemy that I picked from what you said there, was that on the one hand you were saying, I want to take all of the wisdom and everything from my old with my new and go forward. And on the other hand, you were saying there, maybe I don't actually need to take all of the old, like I don't want to take the things that led to compassion fatigue. I want to take the good stuff, but not the bad stuff. So I do want to take the old stuff forward, but not all of it. So the dream is really questioning all everything we've talked about, and helping you to find your center on that. But it's also suggesting that there are some aspects of the old that are important for you to take forward, maybe in a transformed way, that's the wisdom, but maybe there are more aspects of that old for you to actually let go than to take forward, to whittle it down to what is important, and the word that you keep coming up with, what is useful going forward. To spend some time on that. And I think that lovely idea you had there of helping helping dying patients in their last days, months, weeks, whatever, to discover their authentic self. You said that, and at the same time you were talking about dealing with all the darkness there. Brings me back to your mum and Thomas Merton about lighting the candle rather than lighting one candle rather than cursing the darkness. And maybe that's the metaphor, and you've probably already done it, for you know, we all need a touchstone, or to bring your work down to one kind of simple statement, so that when things get really busy or you do start to get compassion fatigue, you can step back and go, now, what was I doing then? And maybe it's finding that way therapeutically to help each patient to light one candle. All right, so they're not wanting to see everything that's in the dark. They just want to see... They just want to find that one important thing, their true authentic self.
Yes.
There's so much more here. We do have to wrap before our podcast gets to the 60-minute bit where people find it difficult to download. So I'd really like to first ask you if there's anything else that you really want to talk about there, and then we can move to the dream alchemy.
No, I think this is good. You're very intuitive and thorough, and it gave me a lot of ideas that I didn't think about. So this is great.
That's really good. So out of all of that and all of our discussion, and without sitting down for too long and thinking about it, because I'm just going to get you to answer right now, what is the most important thing that you've just got from our discussion about your dream?
I feel the courage to move forward. It's this process of reinventing myself doesn't seem as scary.
Okay, that's
or disorienting.
Or disorientating.
Yeah.
So if we can do a dream alchemy that involves that feeling of walking forward with courage and without being disorientated. I'd like to bring in the idea of lighting the candle, even though that was an aside to the dream. It wasn't actually a symbol from the dream. Being dream alchemy, we've got to go and grab a symbol from the dream there. But I really think because you also wanted to talk about that candle being litten, while you're talking about a dream, any conversation that we have while we're talking deeply about a dream, we're very much in touch with our unconscious, and our unconscious will bring up things like, hey, Thomas Merton's candle, if it's relevant and resonating. So I want to bring that in. But I'm thinking for the alchemy, you know, I keep coming back to the library and your love of words, and you mentioned poetry a lot. Would you like to do a dream alchemy that's around poetry?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That's easy.
I love the resounding yes there. That's really beautiful. So I think to keep... Yeah, because the question, one of the big questions in the dream was, I'm in the library, this beautiful place, which is so totally authentically to me, but, and I'm so excited to find it, but I'm not buying into it all, okay?
Okay.
And I'm certainly not buying into the what 43 may represent, the death. Okay, so what I'd like you to maybe write the poem in a very short amount of time. So it's a gut feel poem. It's not a perfect poem. You maybe write it in 10, 15, 20 minutes. Without interruption, just quickly spill it out. And funnily enough, they often turn out to be the best poems anyway. But when you do it, just imagine that you're sitting in that library as you do it. So close your eyes for a moment, get the sense around of that library, and then even maybe if you feel comfortable with it, make it an old-fashioned and pick up a pen and a nice piece of paper, something like that. But if not, use your keyboard. And maybe make the opening, I'm not going to give you the actual words, but make the maybe the opening of the poem something about... I'm not going to buy into. I don't want to buy the DVD.
Okay.
You know that format of poetry that often starts with something really concrete like that, and then as it goes on, it gets quite esoteric.
Yeah.
To start by, you know, so you're bringing in the symbols from the dream of the library. You're putting yourself in that place, and you're putting in the first line. I don't want to buy that. I'm not going to buy that DVD. No, I don't want to. I'm not going to buy.
What did you say earlier? I'm not going to buy into that.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to buy into that DVD, because although the dream was I'm not going to buy that DVD, you related strongly to not buying into something around that. You know.
Yes.
So, but if that doesn't feel good to you, just make it, I'm not going to buy that DVD. And then somehow, if it happens, it would be really nice if that lit candle came into the poem. But if it doesn't, that's okay too. So what you're really doing after the discussion is writing a poem to further play with those symbols in the dream and see where it leads you, but hopefully to lead you to the idea of what can be achieved for yourself and in your business with that thought of not getting sucked into the panic and worry of the dark, but actually knowing that one very simple step of lighting just one candle can make such a difference.
Okay. This gives me a lot to go with.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing how you go with that, Patty. You know, if whether you want to share with others or whether, as many people do, you just email me later and say, this is how I went, this is the difference it made, that would be great to go. But thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on The Dream Show.
Okay, thank you very much, Jane Teresa.
It's a pleasure. I just love meeting so many guests on the show, and they're always so inspiring, aren't they? You know, by the time you get to the end, we all want to know more. We want to know how Patty goes with her business, what happens, and you can just feel her excitement and passion, and you know that she's found her place. And, you know, that's much the same with every guest we got on the show. It's so wonderful to be on this end of the microphone and to hear all of this and to give it to you. Our next episode, 160, is coming out on the 9th of January next year. So although it might be a little bit early, if you're listening to this on the date that it comes out, to wish you a happy Christmas if you celebrate Christmas, and a happy New Year if you celebrate New Year at the traditional time of the 1st of January, to wish you all of that. And of course, many of you are listening to this, will be listening to this weeks, months, years later. So... There's the day the podcast comes out, and then there's it pops into the library and into the archives. So if you want to listen to any of the other 158 shows, go to my blog at janeteresa.com, click on podcasts, and you can spend 158 hours listening to all the other shows, let alone all the other ones to come. Or you can make your life easy, go to iTunes, where you'll always get the last 10 shows. Or you can volunteer to be a guest on the show, all of the above. Have a wonderful month, and I'll talk to you next month in the new year. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one in the Lifestyle Pod Network section of iTunes.